gosh. Oh my gosh. I'm now saying hello to everybody, and I am getting dog kisses at the same time. Hello, listeners. It is the girls are back. The girls are back.
Hello. We're back.
It is Chris Lambert and Laura Burkholz with the Digest of Riddles in the Dark. And today we're doing covering episode 2.03, which was talk about Mirkwood itself, the forest itself. So how are you doing, Laura?
I'm doing just fine. How are you doing?
Good. I'm doing good. I'm as I shared before we got on, I feel discombobulated today. We're doing this on a Monday, and I don't know. The day's just gotten away from me, but at least I got to sit down and just, you know, this is like recess for me. This is fun. Fun talk.
Yeah.
Sorry.
And the dogs.
We got the Radagast going on here.
Well, we have a new cat, but I don't think he's going to make a lot of noise.
Totally so. The cat. That's so
Charlemagne,
cool.
Yes.
A long-haired cat. Very nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, good.
All right.
Okay. Well, let's jump into this. We talked, Corey and Dave and I talked about the wood, Mirkwood, and, you know, how was it going to be how is it going to be portrayed? And specifically, the riddle has to do with what will the elves' relationship with Mirkwood be? So I'm going to read the riddle out, and then we can like maybe talk about it a little bit. So the riddle is, how will the elves' relationship with the encroaching evil in Mirkwood be depicted? So we have A is the book answer. The forest is uniformly dark with no light or dark boundary, but the elves are living in peace, meaning that they're out and about and, mm-hmm. you know, they're not – or, you know, there's no military kind of thing going on. B is the forest is uniformly dark with no boundary, and the elves are living in crisis, which is, you know, there maybe are forays, you know, like they're defending the realm kind of thing against the evil. C is there is a clear and unchallenged evil/elf realm demarcation, and the elves are living in peace, which we call the Doriath answer, because that's similar in theme to the Girdle of Melian in the Silmarillion, where, mm-hmm. you know, like this unseen barrier that protects them.
A protected barrier, a magical barrier.
Magical barrier,
more or less,
right,
yeah.
right. Magical barrier, not like manned with outposts barrier, but it's mm-hmm. actually a magical barrier. And then D is there is an actively defended boundary between the encroaching evil and the elf realm, i.e. the elves are in crisis. And in this case, then we are talking about like outposts with sentries and things like that. So it's not a magical boundary. It's like a defended boundary.
It's like a perimeter, a defended perimeter.
Exactly. And then E is none of the above, which I think we had to include just in case.
Because there's always those none of the above people. Always
those none of the above people. So it's an interesting one because, you know, I mean, in the book, it's this kind of, it's almost like a Zen koan. I mean, you've got this evil. Well, actually, Corey talked about it. You know, in the book, yes, the animals have turned black, but they're not evil in themselves. You know, they haven't turned evil.
And in the book too, it's been Mirkwood for a long time. The elves are kind of used to it, and you know, it seems a little bit though that. In the book, there's a little bit of sea going on, too, because the spiders don't go where the elves are. You know, the areas where the elves were having their feasts, the spiders don't go there. So there's a little
right.
bit of that.
Right. It's kind of like a protected bubble wherever the elves are. Well, yeah. And the elves are hunting. I mean, they're hunting the White Hart, mm-hmm. you know. I mean, there's a thing that goes through. And so it's kind of interesting. It's almost like, I remember one time I was reading it and I thought to myself, it almost is truly like fairy with a capital F, where it's almost like a parallel universe. Some, you know, I mean, that was kind of one of my thoughts one time. It's like they're existing.
Sure.
Almost in spite of how Black Mirkwood's gotten, they are, you know, they have, it's like, you know, they're kind of in their own little world kind of thing.
Yeah. Well, it's a very medieval symbolism to be hunting for a white hart like that too.
Right, and the little feast, and the feast mm-hmm. that disappears as soon as the people enter the clearing.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's another one, too, you know, because I know, I can't remember what book it was. Well, I know Smith of Wood Major has it, I think, where they're dancing, you know, the elves are dancing, he enters the clearing and they disappear. But I know also, I think, was it Sir Orfeo or one of those, where there's a similar kind of thing that goes on, either feasts or dancing. And as soon as he enters, as soon as he sets foot in the glade, then they disappear.
I think it is Sir Orfeo, but don't hold me to it, because I'm not a medievalist.
And one of the reasons I remember that is because I think I had just listened to that episode of the Fairy Fantasy Class before he did.
Mm-hmm.
And I read this bit of The Hobbit, because I think I was doing a course where I had to read The Hobbit at the time, and I remember thinking to myself, wow, that is so
what a
similar.
Coincidence.
So,
yeah. Kind of I think you're right. I think it's Sir Orfeo. I think it is.
So that's an interesting thing. But, you know, I just tend to think that that would kind of go over the heads of the audience. I just don't think – I think that's way too subtle.
Yeah, and I think – you know, I think that that's kind of a different sort of elf than has been shown so far. It would be tough for him to show the elves – In that light, you know, I mean, even in Lothlorien with Galadriel, they still have an actively defended border. They don't have magical borders down there.
Yeah, that's true. That's
and
true.
Thranduil is no Galadriel. So I don't think they're going to be.
You, sir, are no Galadriel.
Sir, not Galadriel. Although your hair is very nice. You're not Galadriel.
Very nice. And you have those amazing eyebrows.
Yes. Amazing, yes. So what did you say, Trish?
I'm just looking that up, actually, because I don't remember what I said.
And I thought you said D.
Did I say D? I'm looking this up now, just to double check, because I forget. Hold on. Doom, 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 doom. 2.03. Where is it? Oh, it's not up here. Oh, yeah. Where is it? Riddle 2.04. Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. It's down here further. Hold on. Dead space. Oh, come on. Why is it not? Oh, there we go.
You said D. I'm looking at it.
Yeah, Coriagos.
Yeah.
You said D. Which was, going back to the thing, we said there will be an actively defended boundary between the encroaching evil and the elf realm. And the thing is, for me, I think my reasoning, and I think Dave said C, didn't he? I think Dave said C. Oh, yeah.
He said C.
We said we... We then counseled everyone else because we did so poorly the first year with our scores. Everybody else should answer A.
The reason
I picked D was it just seemed to me like that's what would play on the film, on the screen, you know.
Yes.
For people, this, Jackson has to do this at least somewhat for folks that haven't read the book.
He's going to show them, you know, at war, you know, he's not going to give up a chance to, I think, show them, you know, doing some cool elven fighting, you know, so.
Yeah, and I think I even said that in the episode, you know, I laughingly talked about John and at the on the Lonely Mountain Band and how on Hobbit Day, you know, his big highlight for Hobbit Day was the guy who makes swords, you know, Arctic Fire.
Yeah.
And I said, you know, as my example, I said, you know, there are those viewers who want to see battle, you know, they want to see battle. And actually, we saw Peter Jackson's sneak peek that accompanied the release of the Blu-ray DVD of the movie last week. And and specifically with Toriel, but also with Legolas, but especially with Toriel, you definitely saw them sort of like a battle mode. And in fact, there was one scene where she's interrogating an orc and is threatening to kill the orc. So, again, that points kind of more toward a D, it seems like to me.
Yeah, I think so. You know, the other thing, Well, what I thought is, you know, maybe I'm in none of the above because I was wondering if instead of the forest having a demarcation, perhaps they are kind of stuck underground. Perhaps the only time they're really at peace is when they're in their underground area. I wonder if they're going to show it more expansively than it's, you know, in the book, it's basically just the hall of the king, but I wonder if they're going to have that be the elven realm will be mostly underground. And
now let's see picture somewhere. And I'm trying to think, I don't know if it was Jackson. Sorry about that. That's my puppy. There's a battle going on here next to me. I don't know if you can hear it. There's a picture, and I don't think it was at the sneak peek. I think it was when we were talking. I think it was in the last episode, the episode that just went up today, in fact, the Beatles in the Dark, where we were talking about Thranduil's realm, where there was a picture of the concept drawing for the movie of Thranduil's halls, and it looked a lot like either a John Howe or Alan Lee, I can't remember which one, drawing of Menegroth.
Okay.
So, actually, to me, what it looked like, I jokingly said or thought that it's kind of the opposite of Lothlorien. You know how we used the Lothlorien, it was going up into the trees, and this drawing was like they're living down at the roots of the trees.
Yeah.
Kind of odd looking, you know, but yeah. So that's I think, what he's going to do. But that's a really good point. You know, they've got that bridge that remember the bridge from the original movie scroll back when this was going to be part of movie one? Where there's a seat of them going across the bridge into the Elven domain, and that could be. Well, I suppose technically that could be like a demarked boundary. You know, so that would make it like what D? I guess
that would make it like D. Yeah, I think the elves are going to be living in crisis. I think they're going to be, I think they're going to be addressing this evil that's spreading so quickly through Mirkwood. So,
yeah, I can't. Yeah. I'm just ignoring it.
No, I don't think so. Right. I don't think so. So, I think they're going to be aware of what's going on. But then, you know, then does that make sense for them to all, you know, pack up and head up towards the Lonely Mountain if they're being threatened at home? So, I don't know. I don't know. But on the other hand, once Dol Guldur is defeated, which presumably will be in movie two, then I guess they would have a reason in movie three. You know, presumably Mirkwood would be tamed by then, and the evil would be gone away. So I guess they could head up to the Lonely Mountain then. It would make sense for them to be able to leave at that point. So
yeah,
I guess I'm D, but I'm thinking that it's going to be mostly underground instead of a lot of forest being untouched.
The boundary would literally be like at the door of the
yeah
of the entrance.
It's going to be
hall,
big. Right? It's going to be really big.
Yeah.
So yeah. Kind of like a hidden realm. It's kind of like a hidden.
Yeah. Right. Well, let's see. We have heard from. And I've been really bad. I really have got to reach out to the analysts. I mean, first of all, to, you know, I'm sure there might even be some who are like, oh, okay, I never said I would do the second year.
Yeah.
But the good old Mark Fisher, American Golden Star, have put their answers in. Now, Mark actually did write us a thing. Let me read you what he has to say. So he kind of goes through, let's see, does he go through all four options? Yeah, he does, I guess. Okay, so he says, okay, so let's talk about 3A. Is the forest uniformly dark? Even in the books, this isn't the case. The reason Thranduil has his halls in the far north is explicitly to avoid the encroaching shadow, at least according to notes and unfinished tales. So while there's no magical boundary or anything like that, it would be reasonable for the region around the elves to be less affected than the rest of the forest, and there would be good cinematic reasons for that, too. That's a good point. And then 3B, are the elves in crisis? This is trickier. They're obviously not in anything like a state of actual siege. If they're still carelessly throwing barrels into the river and expecting them to reach Lake Town, they can't be too worried about surrounding enemies.
That's right.
On the other hand, the movie has to account for the capture of the dwarves. The book makes sense of this by quoting the historic animosity of the elves and dwarves. They did not love dwarves and thought Thorin was an enemy. But that just won't make sense if Thranduil has already pledged himself to the kings under the mountain. That implies that there's at least some outside factor raising the tension in the woodland realm, even if they're not out and out at war. Okay. That seems to put me at about 50-50 on both your sub-questions, which makes it tricky to pick an answer. I doubt the forest will be uniformly dark, but I also doubt there will be any kind of a distinct boundary. I don't think the elves will be in crisis, but I can't see them being entirely at peace either. I'm not completely sure which of the four options fits here, but D seems closest in spirit, I think. So he put D. So he's a D boy.
Well, he's kind of hedging his bets there, but he's got a lot of good points, you know, although I can still see them putting the barrels in the river. I don't think spiders would care so much about their barrels and I think the orcs, if there are orcs, they are probably following the dwarves would be my guess. So.
Well, and don't aren't the barrels going in the river pretty much right at the edge of the forest? I mean, they're out of Mirkwood.
Yeah. Yep. They're out of Mirkwood pretty quickly.
Yeah. Well, so yeah. Well, now Merrick and Goldastar is interesting. Merrick said D also, but Goldastar said B, which means they're still in. They are definitely in crisis. But that, she says as she scrolls up, there's no boundary.
There's no boundary. Yeah. Right. There's no obvious boundary. So, right. Yeah.
Yeah. I think, I mean, I agree with you. I think the elves are in crisis no matter what. I think B and D really are the two choices. And it is kind of a 50-50.
Yeah. That could make the most sense.
Yeah. Now, the other result we have is from our Facebook page of listeners who are voting on that. And I believe they also said D, did they not?
They did say D. They did say D.
So that's the overwhelming answer is D, yeah. I mean, that's the winning answer right now is D, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Interesting how this comes out. So. Now, what we've got listeners have weighed on too,
we
right?
We do. We have some listener comments. And we have a couple just general comments that I think might be interesting to talk about first.
Okay.
Now, Harold Johnson, this is from the Facebook page, the Tolkien Professor Facebook page, says, listening to 2.03 right now, you know what strikes me? In season one, much speculation seemed to be about how Peter Jackson and crew were either going to take the easy road or, worse, mangle the story. But since Unexpected Journey came out, the tone seems much more, how might Peter Jackson and crew adapt the written story in ways that makes it really cool on screen? With a couple months to reflect now, I think Unexpected Journey is a surprisingly good story on its own and possibly the most successful so far in adapting and presenting the themes J.R.R. Tolkien was trying to tell in his writing. And from the way you and Trish and Dave are playing with speculation now, it seems you agree. I wouldn't be surprised if in the end, The Hobbit trilogy is a much more compelling movie series than Lord of the Rings was. And I love Lord of the Rings. So... Yeah, you know, I think I might agree with that. I think it's been more successful so far than the Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, I think it has been too, frankly.
Yeah, so.
I think it has been too. And he's right about the change in tone, you know. I mean, both Corey and I repeatedly said, you know, as a way to cover our butts with our, you know, to explain our low scores, that, or at least I know I said quite a few times that, you know, one of the reasons I voted the way I did last year was because I honestly thought Jackson was going to mangle the story. I didn't think he was going to keep anywhere near as close to the story as he actually did, even with all the additions. You know, and there's things that bug me. In fact, I was thinking today about how many of Radagast's scenes are just silly. You know, I was glad they put him in, but God, I mean, he's a buffoon. I mean, everything about him is a buffoon. And that
when he kicks some butt down in Dol Guldur, you know.
Well, that's true. Yeah, I mean that was good. I mean, you know, but whenever he, you know, has his like the thing. Well, and it's not his fault, but it's just the thing with the pipe and they re-showed the clip where for movie two where Gandalf goes to the Tomb of the Nazgul and you know Radagast surprises him there, you know, surprises him there, and there's birds. The birds that live in his hair are flying around, and then he takes his hat off, and the birds come in, and they they get in his hair. He puts the hat back on. I was just thinking, you know, I just wish they had dialed that down just some. I mean, they could have dialed him down quite a bit, and he still could have been like comic relief. But it's just anyway.
Yeah, Peter Jackson. Aside, he likes to go a little bit over the top for my taste.
Yeah, he does.
So,
you know,
but I can kind of see what he's going for. He's going for, you know, the nature spirits or the
right.
I mean, he doesn't care about convention.
I'll tell you what I wish he'd done. I wish he had made Radagast a little bit more Tom Bombadilly. I mean, that still could have been, you know, funny, fun, nature spirit kind of thing. And because we didn't get Tom Bombadil in the movies, and he still has a right to use him, it would have been nice if he could have done something a little bit more recognizably Tom Bombadil. But anyway, that's water under the bridge, so to speak. Those are barrels in, under the bridge. But I, but let me just go back and just say after that whole diatribe is, I do agree though that I think, you know, this is a good story. I think it does stand well on its own, frankly. And I think he has actually, I argue, I mean, Tolkien wrote, and this was the thing that the paper that I presented a couple months ago, that, you know, Tolkien wrote about recognizing the difference that adaptation is required when you're bringing his stories to film. Mm-hmm. And, but he also said there shouldn't be that much difference between media, you know, in terms of the core of the story.
Yeah, the story should still be there.
Still be there. And I think Jackson has pretty much, I mean, I do think he has. I think Tolkien believed, if you take away all of the bad experiences they've had with the actual commercial end of the movie business, I mean, I would like to think that Tolkien would have a little bit more, would like this more than maybe some of the adaptations he saw in his lifetime. And that's all I'll say. I'll let you go on reading.
I'm sure he's rolling in his grave. Okay, so we have, And then there was another comment about the fealty, because I know you and Corey was talking about how Thranduil swore fealty to Thror, and several of the listeners took exception to that. And in the scene, so Chris Stevens says, I listened to this podcast yesterday and went to watch the movie again today. On the question of whether the Elven King swore fealty to Thror, in the scene, Thranduil is said to pay homage to Thror. I took no hint that he swore fealty. I viewed it as a king paying his respects to a very powerful neighbor. Now, Thorin may not have the same opinion, but I feel it is incorrect to think that Thranduil is Thror's vassal. So, yeah, and I agree. I didn't get any sense that he was swearing fealty. So I think, you know, when Thorin is captured, I don't think Thranduil is going to treat him somebody he once swore fealty to or swore fealty to his grandfather. So
I mean, I do agree, and I know I've said this before, that what he was doing is what Chris said, paying his respects to a very powerful neighbor and promising to an alliance. You know, promising to come to his aid, much like Théoden, and, you know, the Rohan and Gondor kind of relationship.
You know, I didn't feel like it was even that much. I mean, was it explicitly stated, or was it just a nod? I mean, it seemed like a begrudging little nod.
I'd have to go back and look at that, but I mean, I don't know that that was the case. I can't remember what the narrator said. I guess if the narrator didn't say anything, I'm filling in the fact that he did show up with his army when the dragon came. He just chose to not enter into the battle.
He didn't do anything.
Yeah. And I mean, if he did, you know, quote unquote, promise aid in times of need, then, you know, Thorin does have a right to be pissed off to some degree. Corey is sticking to this whole vassal thing, and I don't think it's a vassal relationship. I just think
You know, the other thing that's going to be interesting is Thranduil knows who Thorin is.
Right.
So, you know, is he going to remember who he is?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Because in the sneak peek, there's a scene where Thranduil is literally lounging on his antler throne, and he makes some kind of snide comment about, you know, what are you doing in the forest or something. And he totally understands.
He knows who it is. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, he's pretty sneery about it.
Is he?
So, yeah.
Yeah. And he's not speaking in Elvish, presumably, so Thorin knows what he's saying.
Right. And Thorin doesn't have to read the
stuff. He's not pulling an Azog. Okay, so let's go on. Okay, so we have some predictions from readers from the Facebook page. This is from Michael. It says, in terms of the riddle itself, while y'all do make some really good arguments, I have to go with A. The reason for this is twofold. There were lots of things in the film one that I thought, oh, of course they're going to change that, either to simplify it or make it what they think is more interesting. But they didn't. I think this could very well fall into that category when all is said and done. And two, I don't think it'd be as difficult as y'all seem to think for Jackson to evoke this duality of the forest. Think about Moria. In the Fellowship film, we're shown a very dark, horrifying, and very scary place that is ruined and filled with darkness and the marks of the presence of evil. However, it's still very much a dwarven place. This dwarvenness is evoked by the way they talk about its history, the masculine and solemn music Howard Shore overlays the scene with, and the rigid, angular, and vertical architecture. I can see Jackson and company very easily doing something like that. And in the case of the river, I can see them saying something like, the forest has taken Bomber. He's fallen to its darkness and evil. And then Thorne's eyebrows narrowing and his forehead creasing as he says with distaste, this isn't the work of the forest. This is the work of the elves.
Oh, I could totally hear Thorin say that.
Yeah.
That's a very good point. I think Michael's got a very good point there. Yeah. And I think that's certainly worth considering. Yeah.
So the elves are sort of in a relationship with the forest where they're sort of living with the darkness and, putting their own, for instance, the river, putting that magic in the river.
Right, right.
Which could actually, I suppose,
be a defense mechanism, too. You know what I mean? It could be portrayed as a defense mechanism, the river.
Yeah. Yeah. So.
Okay. Well, Michael, I think you made some good points.
Yeah. So that's 1A we have there. And then from the Mythgard page, Tony Mead says, I have to go with either B or D on this one, and I chose D. This is the choice that makes the most cinematic sense. For one, it was always clear to me from the book that Thranduil's realm was something of an island of elven peace in the mess that was Mirkwood. And since the filmmakers are clearly trying to emphasize the decay and desolation of Mirkwood through the evil influence of the necromancer, and doing so visually, then they must also emphasize the difference between that and the realm of the elves. Also, visually speaking, Jackson and any other decent filmmaker need to make a point of making each location, especially the important ones, visually unique within that world, so that when you go there, you know exactly where you are. We've already seen this with Dale and Erebor in the first film. Neither of these locations look that much like anything from the Lord of the Rings trilogy, even though we'd already seen locations of related cultures, such as Moria, related to Erebor, and Edoras, related to Dale. Furthermore, we all know that the basic concept of all drama is conflict. Jackson is obviously using Mirkwood to show us the creeping return of darkness into the world, and in order to ramp up the tension in the second film, we need to have characters that we know and are good and for whom we care to be in danger. So there needs to be a sense that there's a battle between the forces of light and goodness, the elves, and those of evil and darkness, the necromancer, the spiders, etc. And we need to see that visually through some kind of actual fight. Lastly, we know from reports of footage seen at various places that there is some kind of confrontation in the forest between Legolas, Witariel, and the dwarves. We've also heard rumors that the elves might somehow be involved with the spider fight. My guess is that this confrontation is either during or just after Bilbo rescues the dwarves and the spiders. So if we ask, why is Legolas running around in the forest with other elven warriors, such as Tariel? Clearly, it's because they are at war with something and out trying to fight it. This siege mentality would also help to justify Thranduil's treatment of Thorin and company. In the book, I always felt like the elven king came off as kind of an unreasonable jerk, especially considering what we're told about the elves' inherently good nature. Why is he so hostile towards a bunch of ragged, starving dwarves stumbling about in the woods? If we have this situation in which they're actively engaged in a war for the survival of their realm, it makes so much more sense that he would have suspicions of these strangers running around in his lands, especially if we've been set up with this previous grievance between Thranduil and Thorin in the first film. That's my take on the question, D. So I'm sorry to have read the entire thing, but I thought it was really interesting, and I think
it makes a lot of really good points.
You know, that we need to see these people that we care about, you know, and Legolas is somebody we care about from the previous film, in danger. That's gonna ramp up the storyline. And also to make the place visually unique. And that's why I kind of think that they're maybe gonna do the underground route, because that would be really unique.
For a really different
kind of elven realm.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. And it'll be a way to certainly differentiate it from both Rivendell and Lothlorien.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So that was a very thoughtful answer. So thank you, Tony, for that.
Absolutely.
All right. And then we have a couple more. Taranel.
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 Taranel sounds better.
Hopefully it's not Taranel.
Taranel. Oh, that's so fun. He or she says, I'm going with D, mainly because I would like to see an Elf Queen of Shannara-esque sequence where there's a heavily defended barrier separating the Elven King's Halls from the rest of Mirkwood, and the elves are under siege from the spiders, the other evils in Mirkwood, etc. However, I don't envision there's really any specific difference between how the Elven King's Castle and the rest of Mirkwood. That is to say, there won't be a Lothlorien scenario where there's a stark visual contrast. With the elves being at war, I'd expect their domain to look just as dark and bleak as Mirkwood, except spider web free, and then there being an actual physical barrier separating the two. I could also see a scenario where Bomber falls in the river and is poisoned by the necromancer's influence, and then the company is carrying him through the forest. They get found by an elven patrol with Legolas and Tariel and get taken back to the elven king. But then that sets up more conflict between him and the dwarves, that they are bringing the blight inside the walls in the form of Bomber. So,
you know, and we actually, when we talk about the spider episode, we could not remember, well, I don't know if it's a remember. I think it's more like we were speculating about whether Bomber's awake or asleep during the spider thing. We don't know.
I mean, awake.
The way that Taranel's talking, well, I mean, in the movie, the way Taranel's talking about it right now is, you know, Bomber would be asleep during it because that's how, you know, the spider issue would have to be showing up between, you know, when Bomber falls in the river and the Elven Patrol brings him to the king. So, yeah. But, yeah, in the book, he's awake, right? He wakes up, yeah.
He's awake.
So, I don't know.
He's awake. So, that's kind of heading towards the next week's thing. So, but right. But there is another D. So, and then the last one, Hamfast, is also D. The Elves realm is currently resisting the cancer affecting the rest of the forest, but the Elves are worried about it spreading to their realm. This will be heightened by their encounter with the spiders whilst fighting the dwarves, and will eventually lead to a party of elves heading out to fight the evil in the forest, which will replace the party as the event which allows Bilbo to bust the dwarves out of the prison. Oh, that's interesting. So instead of the feast, they'll all go out to fight the evil, and that's when the evil will rescue them. So that's
right.
I could see that.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Interesting.
See that.
Interesting. Yeah, I now do talk about the, you know, the jailbreak in two episodes from this one, because you and I are talking today about 2.03, and 2.05 is the one where we talk about, or I think the riddle is even about, you know, how is the escape affected.
Mm-hmm.
So you and I will be talking about that in a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
But that is interesting. Yeah, that's right. I mean, I don't remember that we talked a huge amount about what would be the circumstances under which, you know, Bilbo would free himself up to be able to go spring everybody. I know we've talked about the fact that, you know, we can't really see them getting drunk, but you and I'll talk about that when we get to that episode. That's right.
We don't want to get too far ahead of ourselves. So it looks like D is what most people are going with. It looks like D. It seems like everybody thinks they're going to be in crisis, and I think that's for good reason. I think they're, you know, it makes sense that they're not going to be just sitting around partying, that they're going to be.
And I agree with Tony. I just think it makes cinematic sense. I think, you know, it just seems to me like elves sitting around partying would be too much at odds with the aura that Jackson's created in the first film.
Oh, exactly,
film.
With the whole, with the tone of the film. It's much darker than it is in the original book.
Much more
threatening. So,
yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Goodness, you know, Azogs follow him around, so.
I know.
There's not going to be a lot of parties going on, I don't think.
No, definitely not. And actually, speaking of which, we're going to backtrack just a tad here, but there was a scene in the sneak peek, Jackson's sneak peek, and you know, we got to take this with a grain of salt because this might not be the sequence, but it looked like the sequence was that the way that the company actually ends up entering Bjorn's hall is that they're running away from something or someone, which we would assume would probably be orcs/wolves. Yeah. And literally come busting through the front doors of Bjorn's house.
Ah, I mean,
that's like something's in hot pursuit of them. So that could have been after they've arrived at Bjorn's and they were out, but I doubt it. So that's going to be interesting to see. But it was definitely Bjorn's house.
Yeah, well, they were going to have to change that where they come in two by two because that would take way too long. So.
And, I would say, because we leave them at the Carrick, my thing is that, I would assume they're going to walk down the Carrick or when the movie starts, and we're going to have an episode about how the movie's going to start, so we'll go into that in much more detail. But I would think that, you can't have too many minutes of movie before there has to be some kind of dire circumstance.
Exactly.
Which is probably going to be, being chased by orcs. So then they run, and Gandalf maybe do the same thing he did with Rivendell. This way!
Yeah, maybe Radagast will show up and...
Radagast will show up. Come on, this way, run this way, and they come bursting through Bjorn's door.
The world's
so that's
worst distraction, Radagast.
Oh my God!
Why don't you lead him away?
Somebody did a comic strip on The Hobbit, and I think one of the strips was something about how Radagast forgets what he's supposed to be doing and just runs around in circles instead of leading the orcs away from the company.
Poor Radagast. He just...
Lord. Well, I think it's conundrum time.
Yes, it is.
So we are going to do a conundrum that actually has nothing to do with anything that was ever discussed in the Riddles in the Dark episode, but we touched on it just briefly in this episode, which is the White Hart, which is either going to be a deer or it's going to be an elk like the kind that Thranduil was riding. Anyway, some kind of creature like that in the book they see leaping through the forest. It's a hunting party, right? They're hunting horns in the book. Yeah. So we want to know.
And the hart shows up, and then some other deer show up afterwards. But the hart jumps across the river, and doesn't that startle Bomber so much that he falls in? That's how he ends up falling in. And the dwarves start shooting their arrows at him, too. So.
Right. And I think finally, Thorin says something like, stop wasting your arrows.
Stop wasting your arrows, yeah. But wait a minute. Now, was that before? No. So they're shooting their arrows, and then they realize Bomber's fallen in. Bomber's fallen in the water.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So we're wondering, is the White Hart going to make an appearance? Not is Thranduil going to be riding around on a white
horse, but is that
incident going to happen?
Is a white deer-like animal, whether it's the elk or an actual deer, a hart, show up? And it doesn't necessarily have to be in the same places in the book. And it doesn't necessarily have to leap over the river. Just want to know if it's going to put it in appearance.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, it could be grazing in, in the next glen over or something. But just the fact, is there going to be a white hart-like animal in the forest that the company sees?
So what do you think, Trish?
I think yes.
Yeah.
What do you think? I think
yes. I think yes, too.
I mean,
because I want to see it, not because I really think it's going to be there.
Well, and then we also have these little things, Gandalf not remembering the names of the Blue Wizards and the fact that they call Azog a Gundabad orc and, these little things that that Jackson's put in. That's why
Why else would Bomber fall in the river? It's a little exciting thing that can happen and we'll see this magnificent white stag jump over the river and then he'll fall in. I think it would look very cool. So I hope they do it. I hope they put it in.
So we're both yeses on that one, right?
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, okay. Cool.
So
well, like I said on Car Talk, we've come to the end. You've wasted another however many minutes it's been with us on Riddles in the Dark Digest.
Oh, come on. It's not a waste.
No, it's
I'm well
not
spent.
A waste. I'm being funny. It's definitely not a waste. This is the highlight of my day. Yes. Yeah, so that's great. And everybody keep on, you know, keep on putting in your comments on this. You know, just because we've gone through an episode doesn't mean we won't go back. I mean, especially when we get kind of toward the end of the year wrap up, we may go back and do some reviews of anything anybody's added. So, you know, keep those cards and letters coming in on Facebook and on the Mythgard site, and we will keep doing what we're doing.
That's right. All right, everybody. Thanks for listening, and Godspeed.
Hello, everyone. This is Laura Burkholz again. We just need a slight correction to the conundrum this week. The heart that jumps across the river in Mirkwood is actually a black heart, not a white heart. So for the conundrum, we're going to ask, will a white or black deer show up during the river crossing of the dwarves in Mirkwood? Thanks for listening, and Godspeed.